91.3 KXCI Tucson, Arizona. Welcome down to your end of the dial. You're listening to Locals Only. It's 9 o'clock. We're at the second hour of the show, the live section, where we go out and get a local Arizona artist, pull them out of the bars, put them on the air and into your home, your car, wherever you are. But actually, tonight, we didn't really go to the bar. We went to the bedroom. We're going to have Jeremy Michael Cashman and his band doing songs from author Jason Fisk. Coming to you live from Studio 2A, here's Jeremy Michael Cashman.
We met in the gray village library. I wanted his life story for my own. He told it to me so bold and bluntly. But the raw meat of his heart was shown. We'll be right back. the table, me, him and the digital recorder. Books surrounding us on the shelves everywhere. Me is always changing awkwardness into order. Plowing through his silence and his lonely blue stare, he began telling me about the desert heat, his childhood, and how he used to get beat. Pain was nothing in this sunless Arizona night. The fear of emptiness that caused his fright. Self-hate filled my head as I cringed at his tale. I didn't want to see him as anything but tough as nails. His loneliness translated to weakness in my eyes. His vulnerability was something I was starting to despise. Father picking him up by his hair. And slapping him in the face with his free hand. At 13 he drove his drunk dad from here to there. Keeping quiet at school, 'cause no one could understand. His blue eyes grew cold as he leaned in toward me. And said the only love he knew was this sort of thing. Dad's companionship and rage of tolerable degrees. All he knew was his dad in anger and how to submit. Self-hate filled my head as I cringed at his tale. Him as anything but tough as nails. His loneliness translated to weakness in my eyes. His vulnerability was something I was starting to despise. We'll be right back.
93.3 KXCI Tucson, Arizona. You're listening to Locals Only. I'm your host, Michael John Serpy. Going to be here with you till just about 10 o'clock, and I'm coming to you live with the Jeremy Michael Cashman Band. How you guys doing?
We're doing good. Thanks, Michael. How are you?
Not too shabby. Now, I was, like I alluded to in the beginning, this isn't a normal rock and roll gig here. We kind of have a... Why don't you, first of all, go ahead and take it around the horn. Who you got here with you tonight?
All right. Well, we have you, Michael John Serpy, on host, front and center. Green microphone cover, too. I like the look of that. On drums tonight, John, my brother John Cashman from Bend, Oregon. He came down for tonight and Wednesday's release as well. All of my family members are wonderfully talented, and I always love it when I can get a chance to play with them and record or do anything with them. So it's a real treat having him down here for a few days to do these shows with us. It's always fun. And Chris Gunn, local hero, Low Ones, he's doing bass with us tonight and doing a great job. And, you know, I also get to return the favor and play guitar with his band, the Low Ones. And then Noah Thomas of Beautiful Bird is with us tonight on theremin, trumpet, melodica. I see a couple other things down by his feet, too, but I can't quite make them out. Wah pedal. I see the wah pedal. Beautiful Bird's playing Saturday at the Red Room. It's worth getting down there. It's, I think it's at Vicky Brown's CD release as well. And are you running films, you know? We're running films, too, so that's an equally as appetizing gig. That would be a nice way to fill out your weekend. And the author of the story, my brother-in-law, Jason Fiskin from Chicago area, and he's here as well through the release date on Wednesday as well.
So that's what I want to get to. Jason, first of all, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is Jason's mic on? Yep. Excellent. So let's get a little background about this. This is a really interesting project, and that's one thing that I do like. I mean, Locals Only is very good about getting bands in here, especially if there's a CD release show or if there's some, you know, live show coming up to get the word out there for people. But it's not too often that we get to have a project that's multimedia, and that's just for the sake of art and craft in itself, which is what this is. Why don't you go and explain it to the people? What am I holding here?
Let me kind of take you back to the beginning.
Sure. Yeah.
Maybe 2.5 years ago, right, Jeremy?
That sounds right, yeah.
And you came and or you called me and said, maybe you can fill that in with the kinks and you want to...
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, we just talked about collaborating, right?
Right, because, yeah, the...
And doing something together. And,
right.
You being of a writing trade of all sorts of tricks and of the trade. I think that's how we began our start together, was just coming up with, having Jason maybe coming up with something.
So,
and
I had this character in my head, Walter Sloak, and I kept writing maybe a poem here, a short story here, a short story there, which I've included a lot of them in this book, mm-hmm. book, CD, lyrics, some poems. But it kind of got in my head and couldn't shake them. And then... started writing some lyrics to songs and sending them off to Jeremy, and he was sending them back to me. It was an awesome experience. He was breathing life into my words for me, so it was really cool.
And in a way, also pushing you along to write more about this character.
Absolutely, yeah. We were, going on and on. So this guy stuck in my head maybe for 2 years before the lyrics and everything came, and it was a very fun experience, very weird, like... almost otherworldly how this whole thing happened and came to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have, this is, how many copies did you make? This is 100, right?
We have 100 copies.
100 copies. Yeah. And basically what you get, there's going to be a CD or rather a book release show for this at Plush this Wednesday night, mm-hmm. in the lounge. And basically it's a really well put together, it's a book of illustrated short stories, and it chronicles this kind of messed up dude who's not really a messed up guy because he's kind of a figment.
He's kind of a muse for the narrator, for the speaker, interviewer. You know, mm-hmm. he creates his character to work out his own inner demons or whatnot, and kind of gets fed up with the guy towards the end. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
so you got it's really nice hand put together book. It comes with the CD, and basically, Jason had written these, and then Jeremy put music to them. Word for word, except for a couple times where you made a verse, a chorus, you kept it pretty true to how it's read.
Spoken. And Jason was easy going. He sent them to me. He's like, if you want to switch them around or add a chorus or a bridge, you know, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. But I thought the real challenge would be to work with what he gave me and to give him some song structure. And so, I switched up to chord progressions to hopefully kind of you know, my normal ear for a song craft, but I really tried to stay with it word for word, which was really part of the great challenge for me.
Another thing I enjoy about the book as well is your notes, your recording session notes that go along with it. So it kind of helps flesh it out more with the stories, you know, how you got it off the ground.
Yeah. And that was another part of the great challenge is that the character in the story was with a digital recorder in a library recording the interviews with this guy. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go into my little studio and record. Is the first thing that came to my mind with a chord progression. So all the songs were recorded as they are on the disc with no rehearsals. As soon as I found a chord progression that worked with the melody, I hit record and I'm reading them as I'm recording them because I thought it would be true to character to keep a field recording essence to the way I went about making the song. So they're real primitive, they're early conception, but that was really part of how the story went. So I felt like it was really nice to run that parallel to the way Jason's story was kind of set up. So
yeah. Okay, well, we got, what is it, actually 7 songs?
Yeah,
eight songs. You're going to play, the band's going to play 5 of them tonight. You play 2 already. Before we do that, but let's get some more background about this guy. You're going to do a reading from this.
Yeah. This is a short story I wrote. It's called Walter Sloak's Origins. Walter Sloak's origins were questionable. His mother, Emily, was part of his life for only a few short months before she passed away. Her death was also questionable. His uncle Carl and his aunt Elizabeth raised him. Emily was Elizabeth's sister, and according to the men in Walkersville, Emily, the younger one, was the looker. Unfortunately, she was also a bit slow. According to rumor, her mother, Beatrice, kept her locked in the house so she didn't have to deal with any of the Walkersville men's false pretenses. She said she could smell BS a mile away, and that Walkersville men, single and married, smelled the worst. Beatrice's husband had left her a fortune after he passed away, and their farm was sold off. Emily lived with Beatrice until the day her mother died. The very next day, she moved into Carl and Elizabeth's home. In exchange for Elizabeth's promise to hear her to her mother that she'd take care of Emily, came the money from the farm. Carl, who'd worked all his life as someone else's hired hand, was more than happy to have Emily move into the house. It eased up on his workload. He ceased working overtime. Carl was not an easy man to live with, and Elizabeth welcomed the comfort and company Emily brought into her home. The only drawback, according to Elizabeth's estimations, were that since Emily moved in, Carl was around a lot more. She attributed that to his working fewer hours, since the money was not tight anymore. When they were younger, they would go through the normal spats that siblings go through. It wasn't until they were young teens that Elizabeth realized Emily was a bit special, a bit slow. There was an incident where a young man lured Emily into the boys' bathroom. After that, Beatrice decided that Emily, alone in the community, was a liability that she wasn't willing to risk and kept her home from school, never to be sent again. It was at that point that Elizabeth's feelings for her sister changed. She was no longer jealous of the attention she was receiving from the young men in town. A seed of sympathy had been planted in Elizabeth, and it grew as they got older. Shortly after Emily moved into the house, the old feelings of jealousy began seeping into Elizabeth's thoughts again. She frequently felt guilty for having these thoughts, and told herself that they were rooted in her feelings of inadequacy and her inability to give Carl the son they so desperately wanted. She wasn't even able to give him a girl. She often thought Carl was giving Emily more attention than was warranted, and would find reasons to shoo Emily out of whatever room Carl was in. Before Beatrice died, in a sort of deathbed confession, she told Elizabeth that she had married for money, and that she had earned every dime of it. Elizabeth began to understand what her mother meant. Keeping Carl away from Emily was draining. Due to Emily's limited mental capacity, Elizabeth was very aware of her sister's menstrual cycle. When Elizabeth suspected that Emily was pregnant, she began parading her about town. The lockdown policy that her mother had once imposed upon her was now seemingly non-existent. Emily began accepting male visitors on the front porch. The talk around town was that Elizabeth wanted to marry Emily off and keep the money. There was many a suitor that would sit in with Emily until the sun set and then have his way in the evening shadows, but none of them were willing to marry her. By the time Emily began to show, Elizabeth had successfully thrown the shadow of suspicion off of her husband. The town talked, and the men who used to sit with her on the front porch no longer came around. Emily became visibly upset. Her behavior became very erratic. She would burst into Carl and Emily's room at all hours of the night with her night clothes torn. She would stand in front of their bed and scream simple sounds while raking her fingernails down her face and chest and pulling chunks of hair from her head, leaving dime-sized scabs all over her scalp. Elizabeth began locking Emily in her room at night. There were days that she would not leave her room at all. This continued for the remainder of her pregnancy. The birth of Walter Sloak was relatively uneventful. It was quiet, just as Elizabeth had planned. Elizabeth was quietly overcome with the love she felt for the child. When she held the boy, all of the loud chaos surrounding her was drowned out with a comforting hum that came from the center of her heart. Her head was clouded with the reality of the situation, but her heart longed for the weight of the boy in her arms. The first few weeks were sleepless, and Elizabeth did everything she could for the boy, while Emily pulled further and further into herself. She wouldn't hold the baby when he latched onto her breast. She just stared at the wall like a cow being milked. During these times, Elizabeth would stroke the baby's head, knowing that he needed his mother's love to thrive. Emily only left her room to go to the bathroom. She only left her bed to stare blankly out the window. Walter was 2 months old when Emily refused to get out of bed. She began moving her bowels where she laid. Her urine-saturated mattress was beyond saving. Elizabeth switched the baby to formula so he would not have to be part of the unsanitary mess that his mother had become. She enjoyed feeding him. Her heart ached when he cried for his mother, and she fears she recognized that slight hint of jealousy swell within her chest again. It was Tuesday when Emily died. Elizabeth called it a compassionate suicide, something Walter would question as he grew old enough to realize that Elizabeth's truth was not much different than brainwashing. Carl came home that Tuesday to find Emily's broken body bent beneath her second-story window. Of course the town talked. Many found Elizabeth's compassionate suicide comments odd. Some would go so far as to question whether it was really Elizabeth's idea of a compassionate homicide. Years later, when Walter asked his aunt how his mother passed away, she used the phrase compassionate suicide. When Walter asked her what made it compassionate, she said that his mother had tried to make it look like an accident and left no note. Elizabeth said that his mother was the kind of person that wouldn't want anyone to feel guilty for her death, so she made it look like an accident. Walter wondered.
Told of the Mexican sun blazing down about he and his cousins as they played in the dust, trying to catch chickens chasing them around. Old chicken wire and orange fingers from rust. Busy chirps of chicks pull the boys near. Quietly passing protective hands without fear. He grabbed the yellow chick and pulled it to his cheek. Smiling at the yellow fluff and the chick's busy beak. He said he held the chick out away from his body. He was done with its softness, done with its love. And before he realized what he was really sick of, he squeezed the chick to death. I studied his face, his blue eyes, to see if he was done. I was looking for morals. wanted to know if the 5-year-old's eyes got wet. When his eyes flashed, his mind came back to our table. He looked at me, his eyes cold, seemed unstable. His wrinkled brow furled as if under some great weight. He looked into my soul, expected me to recriminate. I quickly made an excuse, said I had to go. Too much information for me to know. I had to go, I had to go. I had to go, I had to go, I had to go. Yeah.
So did you just go crazy sitting there in your room trying to come up with sounds for these words?
A little bit.
The words themselves, it's pretty heavy stuff. It's pretty dialogue intense. And then you are pretty prolific and crazy yourself. So,
But I often don't go into the room with a set of lyrics. A lot of times I come up with more of a groove or a texture. And then later on, after driving around in the truck for a couple of weeks on the way to work and back or whatever, I come up, something kind of spikes into my head, maybe a line or two. So this was a real treat for me because everything came in and I had the sheet of, there wasn't a blank page, there was a full page. Yeah. So I had the real expectation of that. And the other side of having the band is that this is the first time we played these songs together. Mm-hmm. We've been listening to the disc in our own little corners of the world. But the other part of the band is because I did it all myself in the original kind of demo version format of them, this is where they get to be developed. So this is where the bill becomes law. So tonight and the rehearsal tomorrow and Wednesday is going to be a real treat because it really shed light on the real possibilities of the material, which is always exciting. And, but it was equally as exciting to push myself to go in there and come out. Like each song was done in like a 4 or 5 hour session from start to the final mix. And I told myself there wasn't going to be any going back, no overdubs. When Jason emailed me a set of lyrics, I was like, song number 3, great. I'd go in there and 5 hours later, I'd have it mixed and done, and I wouldn't go back. I'd send him it, and if he said it was okay, I was on to the next one. So it was really fun to create that way, but this is equally as exciting because these guys are fleshing out in a way that I'm not able to, you know. So this is really a treat here for us as well because this is kind of where the rubber meets the road. So it's real exciting for us too.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. And that's going to be this Wednesday at Plush, free show in the lounge, always a good time. Always a good show, but this one especially, come on out, support good local music, and also real, true indie art endeavor. It's a beautiful book, it's beautiful stories, and it's going to be a good night. Heck, it's Wednesday, it's hump day. Come on out, get your drink on. All right, let's get back to some music. What are you going to do? Yeah, go ahead, have yourself a little sippy sip there.
You're like, we were talking about Wednesday night. It's my life and I choose who I let in. Yeah, it's loneliness and emptiness that I dread, but I also fear my anger and what has been. I fear my father's wrath to this day, heredity or environment, who cares? The anger's still there, causing disarray. He casually said, picking a book off the shelf. The car crushed his chest, and life had crushed his will. He knocked the thing off the jack while he was under the car. Put his chest through his back. Some questioned it, thought it bizarre. Not me, I know he did it. He took his own life. I know the things he went through with his wife. With his wife. You see, I understand, 'cause I'm trapped too. I'm trapped too.
Go ahead.
you.
My name's Michael John Serpy, coming to you with Jeremy Michael Cashman and his band. They're going to be playing over at Plush this Wednesday, helping release a multimedia event. It's going to be a book. It's going to be a disc with songs accompanying the lyrics of the book. It's crazy. You just got to come out and get it. Now, what? It's $5.
That's right.
The show's free. The book is $5.
Well, actually, the book is the cost of whatever draft beer is that night at the Plush. So you have the option of either buying a beer for a member of the band and then getting a copy, or you have the, you know, cutting out the middleman, because that's essentially what we do with it anyhow. Or we have the idea, or you can pay for the book if you'd rather not contribute
alcohol
to our damage there.
Yeah, why don't you guys go be in Congress?
I hope Plush is running some steal of a deal, though. We don't know for sure. Still, they don't know if they have 50-cent taps or something. Then we're maybe taking a hit, but
yeah,
it's the price of whatever a draft would be. So.
Not too bad. All right, well, we got, you know, the routine. We got about 7 minutes left.
Yeah.
So do you got a song?
We got another one.
Do you guys want to talk about anything real quick? I mean, you kind of took a hiatus.
Because
you're Davey, your mainstay.
He's back.
Can
you feel it? We can feel it. I played tennis with him last week, so he's back. We're feeling good. So
all the Tucson
we're
feel
thrilled
it.
That Davey, if you're listening, we're thrilled that you're back in town. It makes a big difference. But Chris has been great. Davey was out of town for 2 months, so we hired Chris because we needed somebody to slug out a bunch of rehearsals, and it's been really nice. Chris and I have gotten to know each other pretty well through the last couple months, so that's been real nice too. Mm-hmm. But we'd also like to send out a big thank you to John's family and Ben and Jason's family, Laura and his kids and Heather and Hannah and Sophie and their families and Noah as well. These are busy family guys, and it really, I know what it takes to get these guys in this room and at Plush on Wednesday night. It takes a lot of effort from other people too. So I'm really grateful that everyone's been hunkering down, picking up the extra energy at the home places and at work and things to keep to have these guys here for a few days. It's a real treat. So, we have one more if we want to load it up.
Let's do it. Yeah, okay. we got get on over to the hub in about 7 minutes, 6 minutes. We got Mel Mason filling in over there, the lovely and talented Mel Mason. So stick tuned for that. But why don't you finish us out? Jeremy Michael Cashman and his band coming to you live from Studio 2A.
Somewhat defeated, I asked what happened. He said she cheated. He was 22 and she was 10 years older. His money dried up, she grew colder. It's like my heart got cut out when I lost that job. It's years later that I realized I'd been. The love we had was good. I thought it was unconditional. I misunderstood. She was snorting coin straight up her nose. And what we had traded itself for the rest. These days I don't take it personally, I suppose. But a few years back I was really note was stuck to my windshield with gum. In the car eating, just wondering how come I turn the wipers on, smearing flecks of gum. I felt my mind grew numb. my soul was numb. Stomach, make me wince. On occasion, an adventure I will allow. It's just easier this way, less messy. 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 It's just easier this way.